You're listening to Journals of the Willing from the Tumbling Saber team, a part of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Check us out on the web at starwarscommonwealth.com, on Facebook, iTunes, and Twitter, and take your first step into a larger world. Everybody, happy weekend. It's the weekend finally. I'm Kyle, and over there is Steve, and we're back talking about Star Wars on the printed page. Glad to have you here with us. Let's check in with Steve. What's going on, man?
Hey, Kyle. Not much, as I was saying. Looking forward to this nice 3-day weekend I have coming up. Shout out to all the moms out there.
Absolutely.
Happy Mother's Day.
Happy Mother's Day, moms.
Oh, how about you, man?
All is good here. A little bit chaotic on the home front and at work. Just trying to keep my head above water and not doing such a great job. But you know what? As long as we make it here for the podcast, that's what counts. Because you know what? Star Wars is the priority.
Absolutely.
I figure if I keep telling myself that, then everything else will just go away.
Oh, that'd be great if it was all just about Star Wars.
It all comes back to the GFFA. So everything's good?
Yeah, no complaints. Keeping busy. Like I told you, I'm, starting up a new hobby, really getting into Magic the Gathering. So not Star Wars related, but definitely within the nerddom realm.
Yeah, I mean, it's good to have outside interests.
Yeah. Plus, it challenges my mind. I have to come up with strategies, and I love that kind of stuff. There's just so many possibilities on how you can play the game. So, but every time I go to the game shop, I always see that Star Wars Destiny game, and I'm always tempted to buy it, but I don't really know anyone that plays it. I don't know. Do you know much about it yourself?
No, I think that might be the first time I've ever heard the words mentioned.
Oh, it's like a I guess it's like a dice rolling game mixed with cards, some kind of strategy game.
No, you got me. Gaming as a whole, whether it's video games or board games or strategy games, I just don't have the time to invest in them anymore.
It's a lot, especially with games like that, because it's definitely not like a, like a typical board game. You buy one thing and then that's it. There's definitely like a investment to it, because you have to buy booster boxes of it and add characters to your team or however it's done. I don't know. I'm probably explaining it very poorly, but it's kind of like
a whole
that.
Racket, but it's fun, right?
So I've heard.
All right, so let's get into our breakdown books of the week. I'm going with a collection of trade paperbacks called Star Wars Visionaries. What do you got this week?
I am discussing the first arc for Dr. Aphra.
So we're going to have a packed show.
Yeah. Did you want to hit up the news first? Do you want to go into our picks?
Okay, really quickly. For me, it's all about the Luke and Leia books. Claudia Gray and Ken Liu. I have no idea who that is, but I assume that he's going to tell a pretty good tale about Luke at various points in his life, which is what we've been waiting for. And Claudia Gray doing Princess Leia, again, thank you, Lord.
Right, already a done deal.
Done deal. Absolute done deal. And it seems like it's going to be, I don't know if there's a synopsis out there for the Leia book, but to me it looks like it's pre A New Hope.
It's definitely young Leia.
It's a young adult novel, right?
Yeah.
And it tends to make sense that it would be Leia pre A New Hope.
Possibly like Rebels era. Maybe picking up where that her appearance, left off. Could be very interesting. Kind of like what's going on. Maybe we'll get some peeks into Alderaan.
That would be nice. We've never visited Alderaan properly.
Right. So I think that would be incredible if she explored that a bit.
Absolutely.
I know at my house, we are super psyched for the Phasma stuff coming out. We are big Phasma fans here.
Yeah, let's not overlook Phasma. I'm definitely looking forward to it. I mean, there's a four-part comic miniseries coming?
Four-part comic series that I think, it bridges episodes 7 and 8, which is going to be really cool. Because they didn't really... I mean, we had, that one miniseries before episode 7 that took place way before?
Yeah, Shattered Empire.
And then Shattered Empire, right? So now we're actually going to get, a solid prequel bit. You know, I don't know if anything else is planned to come out. I think that's pretty much it. So we'll get some nice insight as to how the First Order is reeling from their defeat.
And we'll see Phasma crawl out of that garbage compactor and get to a ship before Starkiller goes boom.
and we're getting the book, which I think is a prequel to episode 7.
Okay, I didn't know when that was set. That's interesting to know.
I think that's it. I mean, I could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure it's going to be a bit about how she came up in the First Order. So that would be cool, a nice cool tie-in to Aftermath Part 3. You know, they'll probably confirm that that was definitely her there, you know, with the kids.
Yeah, that was cool. Absolutely her.
So maybe we'll get a nice bridge there.
Yeah, I mean, she's a character that was criminally oversold and underdelivered.
Absolutely. And we're also, I should add an addendum, not only are we big Phasma fans, we're just big Gwendolyn fans in general.
Oh, what's not to love? I mean, good lord, yeah, she's good.
I mean, Game of Thrones fans can speak to that. I think she is awesome as Brienne. So badass. We love her.
Yeah, she seems really, really cool.
Yeah. So we definitely want to see her have more material to work with. And it seems like, you know, based on that one shot in the trailer, we're at least definitely getting more. And I think we've heard, it's been confirmed that she has a much bigger role. So.
Yeah, I think she's going to have it in for Finn. I think she's going to be pretty ticked off with Finn and might have some sort of vendetta against him for the next two movies.
That's exciting.
I think that's, I'm totally speculating, but I feel like she's going to be on the hunt. It'll be her personal job to hunt down her traitorous former stormtrooper.
And right, and I think just thematically, I think it works as a great metaphor for Finn's story. Just, you know, being someone who has been raised in the First Order, he's trying to kind of fight that side of him, you know, fight back that past and those memories. So I think Hera is a physical manifestation of his history as something tangible to go up against is pretty awesome. I mean, Rey obviously has her character story, so I think it adds a lot for at least, you know, for Finn's development.
Yeah, no doubt. She's this big 6.5 foot tall chrome monolith that is just this one big trigger for all of his bad memories.
Absolutely.
Yeah, definitely looking forward to those. Any other news? I mean, I know Screaming Citadel just came out, so we're not going to talk about that this week. We'll hopefully get to that in the weeks to come, but that is the next big arc in the main title, crossing over with Dr. Aphra. And it's been hailed as sort of a sci-fi meets gothic, which I know is just, that must be just getting you drooling like a butcher's dog.
Yeah, people that know me know I love my gothic horror. So to see that come into the world of Star Wars has me so excited.
Yeah, I they've been hyping this thing, so they better deliver.
Yeah, and we'll get to it, but based on how Dr. Aphra ends, I'm pretty excited to see how the first arc ends. I'm pretty excited to see how this ties in.
Cool. Well, I mean, let's get started. I'll kick it off with Visionaries. I've got two or three stories I want to get to, and we'll weave back and forth. I'll kick it off, and then we'll turn it over to you with Aphra, and then I'll come back and I'll end the show with another quick synopsis here. Sound good?
Perfect. Yeah.
Cool. So anyway, Star Wars Visionaries came out in the year. I forget what year was this. This was 2000 and. What does it say here? 2005. So right after Revenge of the Sith, And it's a collection of 10 or 11 stories done by concept artists who worked on Revenge of the Sith. And some pretty recognizable names in the bunch, like Eric Timmons and Feng Zhu and Ryan Church. All kinds of concept artists. If you have the art of Revenge of the Sith, you would definitely recognize a lot of the names and definitely the art styles. And what I thought was really cool about this whole book, and it's legends. None of these are actual canon, which is it's rare. It's a snowball's chance in hell that I'm going to talk about legends on this podcast. But here I am talking about it. I've always loved this collection, and I feel like a couple of the stories are worth talking about, even though they count for nothing these days. But what I find really cool is about them. As somebody who used to consider themselves an artist in the drawing sense, as a kid when you were drawing out these characters, whether they were your own characters or your G.I. Joes or your Star Wars characters, you always had this little narrative playing out in your head. And I can imagine that as these guys were working with George Lucas and their team on Revenge of the Sith, they're sketching out these characters and creating these own stories in their own heads. Maybe this is what that result. Maybe that's what Star Wars Visionaries is their stories finally coming to fruition. And like I said, we'll take a look at a couple of these, and I'll start with. I'll just get the big, the 800 pound gorilla out of the way. Now, there's a story that leads off the book called Old Wounds by Aaron McBride, and this is essentially Twin Suns before Twin Suns. The book kicks off with it's a quiet moment at sunset with Owen. And sorry, Steve, feel free to interject at any point if you have a question or comment or anything.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So it's a quiet moment at sunset with a three-year-old Luke. So this is just 3 years after Revenge of the Sith and Owen, and they're staring out at the twin suns. And incidentally, Luke is wearing the exact same clothes, just a smaller size, as when we meet him in A New Hope. So
I think every iteration of Luke is just wearing the same thing.
Yeah, as he just gets a little bit bigger and just gets the same tunic and pants, just one size bigger.
They don't have a lot of options out
probably
there.
Probably not. Not a lot of money, not a lot of options. I don't think they have Space Gap over there. But anyway, so they're about to turn in for the night, and Uncle Owen... He sees and hears something on the horizon, so he picks up his binoculars and checks it out, and it's this person, creature, charging towards the homestead. So he calls for Brew to bring him his rifle, and lo and behold, it's Maul. And he's really pissed off. And so Maul comes up, and Owen threatens him to stay back, which of course, that's not going to work. So he beats the hell out of Owen, and sees Luke and goes, oh, so there is a son. So I don't know how he knows about Luke, but he did. Hmm. And then he senses somebody else's presence. And then there's almost like a conversation going on within the Force between Maul and Kenobi. And then he tells us, Maul tells us all about how he's been hunting Kenobi this whole time. So it's been about 13 years or so between the Phantom Menace and this point in the story.
Now, do they explain how Maul survived? Because if this was written in 05, right?
Yeah. Well, it was published in 05, yeah.
So this predates the Clone Wars explanations.
Yes.
Okay. So we're not talking any mechanical bodies.
Oh, he was mechanical. He was chopped in half, and he's fully mechanized from the waist down. So I imagine that Filoni and crew took some inspiration from this.
Okay, that makes sense.
So Maul tells Kenobi that the timeline of how he's hunted him all these years. So he says he was 2 days late to Kamino, 1 day late to Geonosis, and he missed him by minutes on Mustafar. And Maul says how he saw, and there's a picture of this, Maul sort of off in the distance looking at what he thought was Anakin's corpse all chopped up. So he just missed Kenobi there. And then from there, he was able to track them to Paulus Massa, where he killed all those little weird looking alien guys. Then from there he tracked them to Tatooine, and he slaughtered Watto, and then from there on to the Lars homestead. So it was a nice little convenient narrative there, a little expository dialogue that shows us how Maul progressed, you know, on Kenobi's trail. But it never tells us really how he got out of that pit on Naboo. It just tells us that he did.
And right, kind of just left it open.
Yeah, and that from that moment on, like he wasn't dead. He just, all he felt was hatred and a lust for revenge for Kenobi, and that's it. And Kenobi, of course, you know, they had to plug this little hole. Kenobi's one of his first lines to Maul is, "Does Palpatine know?" No, he's like, "I didn't bother with Palpatine anymore. All I care about is killing you." And so and here we get the big knockdown dragout fight that I think many people wanted and assumed we were going to get in Twin Suns. Like the two of them beat the hell out of each other. And it, you know, Maul gets an arm chopped off for good measure. So now Kenobi's taken both of his legs and now an arm. And Kenobi gets battered around the same way that Grievous kind of kicks his butt in Revenge of the Sith. Eventually, Kenobi kind of gets the upper hand in the fight and has his lightsaber hilt. It's off. And he's got it like pressed up against Maul's forehead. And you could see there's a bunch of close-ups on Kenobi's face, and he's struggling. Like, do I do this? Do I not do it? And there's a very different tone to Kenobi here. Whereas in Twin Suns, he was very serene and reluctant to fight. You could tell he didn't want to kill Maul. He had no intention of fighting him. In this, it's like he very much says, like, no, this time, like, you're not going to heal so well. It's a very different tone to Kenobi. Which, you know, it felt right at the time. When you first read this book, you're like, yeah, Kenobi's still badass. He's still got it. But in the moment where he's able to finally put an end to Maul, it's actually Uncle Owen who comes to after getting his face caved in. And he blows Maul's head off.
Oh, shoot.
Yeah. So Kenobi gets to, I guess, not have that on his conscience. And Owen is just like, yeah, no, this is over right now, and just puts his rifle against Maul's temple and just blows his brains right out.
I mean, I think what's interesting about at least Obi-Wan's state of mind there, it's, you know, because this is obviously a very different time frame than when we get the Twin Suns. So, I mean, it's safe to assume that the years that he's had to mature really is seen in Twin Suns, as opposed to it kind of makes sense that he'd be a little more eager to finish off Maul.
Yeah, that's true.
This early on, you know?
We're still like 15 years or so ahead of Twin Suns.
Right, so I think his pain is a little more fresh.
Yeah, you're right. That makes good sense. So the final shots are... it's Owen and Kenobi talking, and this is where we get sort of that taste of what Owen thinks of Kenobi in A New Hope. He doesn't have a lot of admiration for the guy, and he's a crazy old hermit, and stay away from him, and he's bad news. He tells Kenobi to, you ask me to keep this kid safe, I'll keep him safe, even if it means from you. Now get out of here. Like he doesn't want Kenobi around at all. And then there's a final shot of Kenobi looking at Luke and Luke looking back at him. And there's some like forced dialogue between the two where Kenobi says that he'll always be looking out for him. So that was a pretty cool story. I mean, that was the one that really sold this book to anybody who has this book. I think that is probably the highlight of it. It was just the conclusion of Maul versus Kenobi. You got a little bit of baby Luke there, and why does Uncle Owen hate Kenobi so much? It ties a bunch of things together. But as we've come to learn now that Filoni got to do the canon version of this, things played out quite a bit differently.
Yeah, I mean, I'd love to check this out though, even still.
I would definitely say this is worth checking out. I don't think it's in print anymore. I could be wrong about that. You might have a difficult time finding this on a shelf anywhere, but I have to imagine it's available electronically.
Oh yeah, or like for older books, sometimes I'll just go on Amazon. And if you go to like the marketplace where they have like used bookstores that have like accounts up there, you can tend to find some of this. Like I haven't read them yet, but the old Rogue Squadron books
by Stackpole.
I got a few of those. Yeah. Got a few of those paperback.
Nice. Yeah, those were good. Anyway, so that's the first story that I'm going to cover here. Again, like I said, that old wound story with Kenobi and Maul was really the big selling point of the book, and no secret why they led with it. But there are a bunch of other stories in this book, and if you're a fan of art like this, it's a relatively short book. You know, each story is about 7, 8, maybe 10 pages, but there's a lot of different art styles in this, and it goes all over the map, like really psychedelic, trippy stuff, to really muted, somber stuff, right up to like almost very, very comic booky type stuff. So it's really interesting that way. Anyway, we'll come back to this later, but for now, let's have you take over and talk to us about the Dr. Aphra arc.
So I've absolutely been loving this arc. I really like Dr. Aphra since she was introduced in the Vader series, and I just think she works so well as a character. And so the arc, I feel like, does a great job at exploring her more so. So it picks up kind of right where Vader leaves off, and her appearance on the Star Wars main arc. She's kind of like back to being the Indiana Jones-esque archaeologist that she is. She's back to digging up artifacts. So it starts off with her kind of digging up this one particular artifact in like the Outer Rim. It's called the Cosmetanic Steps is kind of where she is. And it's so cool because, we don't really like get to see this side of Star Wars very much, because we're always so into, whatever war is happening at the time, whatever's happening with the Jedi. So we kind of get to see a really cool, I always just go back to saying Indiana Jones-esque, but that's pretty much who she is, and it's pretty awesome to see. So she recovers this particular artifact. Not to go into too much, because I know you haven't read it, I don't want to spoil too much for you. But she has a run-in with like a Jabba the Hutt kind of figure. He kind of runs the black market for artifacts. He's humanoid though. He's not a Hutt. And she has some kind of debts that she needs to pay back. So she kind of takes a page from that book, from Solo's book. But so she goes to sell this artifact, and it turns out that her doctorate has been pulled. So she goes to find out that she's no longer Dr. Aphra, because they're investigating how she got her doctorate. And then it turns out that it was her father who put in for the investigation. And it was his way of kind of getting her involved in the research that he's been involved in. And so we kind of, so at the end of the first arc, so that's where the first issue kind of ends. And then we get this really cool mini story at the end of a younger Dr. Aphra still in school, going for her doctorate. And she kind of has this little square off with a professor of hers who's very pompous, very standoffish. And he shows her these symbiotes that he's researching. And she steals them, and she claims that she found them on this other planet. And that's how she ends up getting her doctorate. So it was her father that kind of revealed or insinuated that she didn't get hers kind of through a straight and narrow path. So that's kind of where that leaves off at the very beginning. And then we get into this really cool arc where we find out that her dad is researching this ancient civilization of ancient Jedi, which is really cool.
Mm-hmm.
Because I know that's something that we've been really clamoring for, is some kind of look at older Jedi. So not to give too much away, actually the name escapes me. I gotta see if I can... My issues are so scattered here. The Ordu Aspectu. So the Ordu Aspectu, it's a tale of this one group, and two groups, essentially. You have the Ordu Aspectu, and then you have the more classic Jedi. And there are kind of disagreements on how to follow the order and such. And he was kind of researching what they were doing on their planet. Something happened that ended the civilization, and he wants to figure out why. So kind of the bulk of the arc, surprisingly, takes place on Yavin 4. In the middle chunk, it's on their journey to the Ordu Aspectu. And they end up in the Empire's crosshairs. And so we get this one really cool character. Her name does escape me. I need to write this stuff down.
I feel your pain.
But she's this really cool Imperial general. Totally blanking, trying to find it. But anywho, really cool dynamic between her and Aphra. It's kind of like a cat and mouse between them, and then they follow them to the Citadel, which is where the Ordu Aspectu are. So, anticipation for the Screaming Citadel. The way it ends, and I don't want to spoil too much. You know, it leaves me wondering where they're going to lead with the Screaming Citadel. So we have this one figure, goes by the name of Rur. Oh, it's R-U-R, and I never remember how to say it, but the Eternal Rur, and he's part of the Ordu Aspectu, and part of what he was researching with Kyber crystals and whatnot, he was planning on, in a nutshell, creating eternal life, you know, hence the Eternal Rur, and they kind of come across that rather than putting his consciousness or creating a copy of himself into more of like a mechanical being, he separates his consciousness, kind of leaving behind a more evil presence. And this is kind of what takes over the Citadel.
Well, that's interesting to me. It sounds a lot like it's taking a cue from the Sentinels. The Palpatine Sentinels from the Aftermath book.
Yeah, absolutely. So
some commonality there. Now you said that there's what was going on with Kyber crystals. Whenever Kyber crystals come up in the new canon, I get scared but intrigued because I want to know what they're doing with these things.
Right. So again, I don't think they actually do explicitly say Kyber crystal.
Okay.
But there are crystals at the Citadel. Because I feel like Kyber crystal, so the Ordu Aspectu are kind of outside of the standard Jedi, so I don't think they had the vernacular for it.
Okay.
So they're just these crystals. So I'm going to lead and assume that they are Kyber crystals, which is what I'm going to say. I see this as probably going to develop further into the Star Wars crossover. But they are the source of power for the Citadel.
Yeah, it makes sense.
And so what happens at the end, so to kind of wrap it up, what happens at the very end is they recover this glowing green crystal from the Citadel. And
how big are these crystals?
The one that they take is pretty big. It's comparatively speaking, I'd say the size of a wooden log that you put in the fireplace.
Okay.
So it's big. You know, it's not like a tiny thing that you put in a lightsaber.
Right, because that's where my mind went. Could this be where Luke gets his green crystal from?
It's possible. Maybe during the crossover it breaks or something. Or, you know, maybe, who knows? Maybe there's just more of these. But it seems that she pulls it from a main powerhouse. And then they go... She takes a couple of more things. She goes, she settles her debts with the black market, the collector. And she gives her dad a fake version of the... So she holds on to the actual one. And kind of a nice, kind of cool reference to Indiana Jones again. They bring it to this place called the Quarantine World Number 3. I guess there's multiple. And it goes in like this big vault. So it's very much a sci-fi version of the warehouse where they put the Ark of the Covenant. Which is pretty cool. And then she reveals that she has the actual one. And then they go off. And that's kind of like the to be continued. And, you know, the next arc would be the Screaming Citadel. So I assume she's going to probably return to the Citadel. However, in the final scuffle, it looks like it got destroyed. So I'm going to assume they're either going to go back to the ruins of the Citadel. I'm not quite sure how much is left of it. So that's why I'm curious. Like, the next arc is the Screaming Citadel. She was just at one. So I can't imagine it would be a different Citadel to twice in a row. So I'm assuming they're going back to the ruins.
I'm looking forward to finding out, but sounds like you're right. Now, does she have her two murderous droids with her?
Yes. So BT and... Triple Zero. There we go. Yep, they're there. You know, again, providing the comical relief. They're not as... they're in it, but, you know, they're not as prevalent as before. Because really, what's so interesting about this arc is that, you know, we get a really cool dynamic between her and her father. It's not super strained. You know, you could tell that there's a lot of love there. And I think he brings out the best in her. But they both have their faults. You know, they kind of both... they do stuff to get what they need, you know, whether it's him kind of opening up an investigation on his daughter to get her to follow
dad
along.
Of the year,
you know, she, you know, her being a scoundrel herself, you know, she does whatever she needs to get the artifact that she wants. So there's a lot of similarities there. I mean, she is definitely his daughter. You know, it's interesting, you know, because he's also very narrow-minded in his scope. I mean, he had been researching the Ordo Aspectu ever since she was little. And in a way, that kind of affected the overall family dynamic. I want to say that he and her mom separated. So, you know, there's a lot of just family history there.
It sounds a lot like Indiana Jones and his father.
Exactly. They really pulled from, and you get a lot of that Harrison and Sean Connery dynamic there.
Okay, cool.
So it's really interesting, and it's really brought, you know, it's that dynamic brought into the Star Wars universe. What's also really cool, just on a progressive note, she is unapologetically gay in this arc, which is pretty cool to see. When they drop off the Imperial, the commander, she's like, "It'd be easy to kill you, but you're cute." So,
well, they kind of leave you did here. They not touch on that in Rebel Jail.
No, they definitely do. I mean, you know, she has a previous relationship with Sana Solo.
Yes, exactly. But they didn't. So they didn't there. Hammer too hard on that.
So, yeah, so here, I mean, here she is. She's flirting with women. She is who she is. It's very unapologetic. It's very matter of fact. And it really just makes her a stronger character. She's very confident. And she's just a really good I think, addition to our Star Wars heroes.
Or anti-heroes.
You know, I think, or anti-hero. Yeah, absolutely. But I 100% recommend this story. I think it's very different from the other comics. So I think it's definitely really refreshing. It's very new. It gives us just a different look at this era as well. You know, because then we, you know, because during the arc, you know, they ends up on Yavin 4, for example. So we kind of got to see the Empire kind of occupying Yavin 4.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Kind of what? Yeah. So it's just like totally like what happened after New Hope. So
that's cool.
It's pretty cool to see. Mm-hmm.
Well, you know what? They've always kind of bring it back to the original trilogy, at least a little bit, just to keep us situated and satiated. I mean, for a lot of us, we just want the data points. How does this tie into the movies? Well, there you go. Here's a little bit of Yavin 4 post A New Hope.
Right. And I mean, what kind of, I feel like, makes it a great series is that, you know, it totally stands on its own as well. You know, it doesn't need to rely on constant movie universe references. I think she's totally a strong enough character.
Yeah, well, and fandom agrees with you, because we spoke about this on the last episode of the podcast, but she won the fan vote for the Black Series 3¾-inch figures. So we're getting a Dr. Aphra figure, which is, you know, I guess I can't say it's overdue. She's not that old of a character.
It's I don't know if I would say it's surprising, but I feel like for a comic only character to get that many votes to like warrant a figure is pretty, it speaks a lot to the character.
Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, she almost caught on right away.
Yeah, and like I'm hoping that they have more plans for her as far as beyond the comics, you know? Like I think she's, if not, see, I'd be afraid of her going to an animated series, because being that she's unapologetically queer and she's open about it, I feel like that would be hard. You can't really translate that on an anime. I feel like an animated show, like on Disney, they would be almost...
They would brush all romance right under the rug, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's there for straight relationships. They talk about it. But for that, I mean, that might be... I'm sure they'd be afraid of backlash, you know? Although... Some animated shows out there are kind of pushing the bounds. I think like Steven Universe or those kinds of shows. I mean, they reference it.
And yeah, Clone Wars went there with Anakin and Padme. You couldn't not go there. And Rebels, they've pretty much made it clear that Hera and Kanan are a thing, but they don't punch you in the face with it. So yeah, I imagine that if they brought Aphra into the animated world, I think she'd be a good fit as a character, but that aspect of her identity, yeah, I don't know how they would handle that, especially if it was
right,
unless they made that series, even if it was animated, you could still gear it a little more towards an older audience. I suppose you could do that, and I don't think they'd have to put it on XD.
No, not necessarily. I mean, it could be an, I mean, I don't know if they would do a Netflix series, but they could do it. I mean, it just wouldn't be rated. I don't know what Rebels is rated. Is it rated like TV PG or something? Or is it G? I don't even know.
I'm not sure either. But yeah, you know what? It's not a character. Yeah. Like she's, the Aphra character stands for something, right? Like you said, it's a progressive character, and I don't know if putting her on an animated TV show is the best place for her.
No, I mean, definitely comics as she is, novels possibly. I would love a live action. I don't know how they do it, you know?
Well, interesting enough, did you see, there's an article out today. I'm not sure if it's out today, but I came across it today in the TSW VIP group. One of the members had posted a link to some fan casting. Now, do you watch Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.?
No, but... I mean, I know a little bit about it.
So apparently fans have went ahead and cast Chloe Bennett, who plays Quake, on the show as Dr. Aphra. Which
I could see, I could picture the actress. Yeah, I could see that.
I mean, she's Asian, or at least part Asian, which is what Aphra is supposed to be. mean, I know different artists draw her up differently, but I think ideally she's supposed to be of Asian descent.
Mm-hmm.
And so I saw that. I was like, oh, of course. Afra has to be Chloe Bennett. I would watch the hell out of that show.
Yeah.
I mean, I'd watch a show of Chloe Bennett reading from a phone book. But that's besides the point. I think that's a perfect fan casting. But it would also mean they have to kill off the character on Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. And I you know, as deeply invested as I am in that show, I don't know if I want Daisy/Quake gone from that program.
Right. It'd be hard for her to do double duty, two shows.
But unless, I'm all over that.
Unless it was more of a shorter show. You know, I mean, maybe she can continue to do that. And maybe if it's like a Netflix series or something, maybe they only do 12 episodes or 8 episodes, you know? More of a short order.
Yeah, I mean, I look at something like Jessica Jones and I figure, well, just take this into outer space and it's Dr. Aphra.
There you go.
Did you watch Jessica Jones?
I am 7 or 8 episodes in.
It's fantastic, right?
It's phenomenal. I love it. It honestly, it's not so much about the show, but that is probably one of my favorite theme songs ever. Like, to the point where it's added on my iPod, on my iPhone, and I listen to it in the car. It's just so, like, ugh. But yeah, the show is amazing.
And David Tennant as Purple Man is beyond creepy and compelling as a villain.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, not to get into the Marvel MCU here, but I could see Chloe Bennett on a Netflix show as Dr. Aphra.
Yeah.
The tone, in the tone of a Jessica Jones thriller, bring it on.
Yeah, and just like, you know, being that she's an archaeologist, I mean, we could, through her, we could learn so much about the world of Star Wars, about that universe, just through her alone. You know, like we got from the comic, from the first arc alone, we got the Ordo of Spectre. So we got some peek into the ancient Jedi just because of that one artifact that they were after and all that. So it's pretty, you know, the possibilities are there.
Yeah, they're definitely there. And you know, I'm sure somewhere at Lucasfilm, they're sitting around going, every day this character gets a little bit more popular. What are we going to do? I mean, she's almost outgrowing the comic book medium. Mm-hmm. And there's 6 issues into this character series. And you know, she had a bit role in the Vader series. What's going to happen with this character? I mean, it's pretty interesting what the future holds for this character.
Right. I mean, I definitely think that the next step would be a novel. See if she can sell a book. Which I think, no doubt, if people are reading the comics, they're going to pick up her book. And then, yeah, from there, we'll see. I mean, I know I'm definitely going to buy the figure. 100% going to buy the figure.
Yeah, I probably will, just because. But I only own 1 3¾-inch Black Series, and that's Ahsoka.
Mm.
I found that the 3¾-inch Black Series were so badly overpriced, as I do. I've complained about that a bunch on this podcast. But yeah, the 6-inch is one thing. If you want to price those at $30, great. Go ahead. But for the 3¾-inch to be like at $19, which is what they typically are for me here, ugh, that stings.
Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely going to do it to support the character, but as far as, like, I wouldn't collect a whole bunch.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's how I see it. I'll probably buy Aphra to support the win and to support the character. I mean, she's a really interesting, cool, progressive character. Cool.
Absolutely.
So should I jump back into Visionaries? Are we at that point?
Yeah.
All right. So
yeah, go ahead.
I'll blast through a couple short ones here, and then we'll call it a night. So one story, the one that I'll bookend the trade paperback here. There's one about the origin of General Grievous. Of course, it's not the real origin, seeing as though it's a Legends thing, but I don't envision the reality being all that different. So it's called The Eyes of Revolution, and it's by Warren J. Fu. And really quickly, so it's set on Grievous's planet. And I can't remember the name of the place, but it was a nice looking planet. Anyway, Count Dooku sabotages Grievous's ship and then has his unconscious body taken to Geonosis, where he undergoes a Weapon X style experiment to turn him into the cyborg killer that we know. And there's a bunch of visuals of Grievous's body, armless, legless, floating in a Bacta tank. Very, very evocative of Anakin, or Vader, I should say, in Rogue One.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, so he comes to, and he of course, in this Star Wars universe, they're able to speak through this mouthpiece, and he asks, is he dead? And for some reason, San Hill, who is the... which species was Plagueis again? A Mun.
Oh, a Mun. Yeah.
So for whatever reason, he's overseeing this. He's the chairman of the Intergalactic Banking Clan and part-time cyborg maker. Go figure. So he says, yeah, no, you survived. Your crew didn't. And Grievous is pissed because he wants to die with his people, and he doesn't want to be floating in a Bacta tank away from his home planet, away from the war. So San Hill kind of says, this whole thing is the Republic's fault. We have technology. We're going to fix you, and then you're going to help us defeat the Republic, and then we'll go and we'll save your people from this famine that they're all dying from. And Grievous is resistant at first. He doesn't care about the war between the Republic and the Separatists. But eventually he is sort of left to just dangle in this tank and drift ever closer to death until his will is broken. And I guess he submits and says, yeah, fine, I'll help you. And then we learn that Dooku, he has kept Jedi Master Sifo Dyas on ice the whole time. So it really interesting. So before the experiment begins, San Hill tells Grievous that he's going to need a blood transfusion or he's going to die in the next few hours. And then a few pages later, Dooku is talking to Sifo Dyas' corpse saying, hey, buddy, you ready for your blood transfusion now? So I think they're making the link here that what's left of Sifo Dyas' blood was transferred into Grievous keep him alive. Now, I don't know if that imbued him with any Jedi power. They leave that open ended. If you want to believe that to be true, fine, go ahead. But he also gives Grievous, once the procedure is complete and turning him into a droid, he gives him Sifo Dyas's lightsaber, his first one, which is pretty cool, I would think. So in the end, Dooku tells Palpatine that the experiment, I guess the conversion of this broken creature into this killer droid went better than he expected. And Palpatine is pleased. And he's saying, oh, this is great. This technology is going to come in really handy for the dark side in the years to come. Which, of course, we know what he's foreshadowing. He's talking about Anakin and Vader. So that's the end of that book. I mean, it ends with Grievous sort of... kind of losing his marbles a little bit, and he takes out a whole bunch of those bodyguard droids we see him with in Revenge of the Sith.
Right.
He takes out a bunch of those, and he's getting used to his powerful new body, and you can tell he's just full of hate now. So that was that story. I guess there's no reason why they couldn't pull that and make it canon if they wanted to. I don't think I haven't read everything there is to read, so maybe it is impossible to make that canon, but pretty interesting stuff. But my favorite, did you have any questions about that book before I move to my personal favorite?
No, I was going to say that there's an endless well of legends that they can definitely pull from. And it's cool enough of a concept of his origin that I think it would end up making the character a little more interesting, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I like the story, and yeah, if they want to pull that and make it at least treat part of it as canon, okay, worked for me. But my personal favorite is one that's not really earth shattering, but it takes place completely within the original trilogy era, and just serves to maybe deepen a character that we know. So it's called Entrenched by Alex Yeager and M. Zachary Sherman. So it starts with a narration of a rebel soldier on Hoth moments before the Empire attacks Echo Base. And he's recording a message to his mother as the battle unfolds. And I'm going to just really race through this here so we can get out of here at a nice early time. But he's recording a message to his mom, and there's lots of tips and callbacks to Empire to sort of situate you in the timeline of the battle. So we hear, like, there's a little thought bubble from the PA system at Echo Base saying, Echo Station 3T8, we've spotted Imperial walkers. So you know that we're now it's the battle of the start of the Battle of Hoth. And they're kind of running around the base, fighting off troopers here and there. And eventually they run into the hangar where the Falcon is just taken off. And of course they run like face first right into Darth Vader and a few snowtroopers. So they turn around, try to escape to a different hangar, but this soldier who's been narrating all this to his mom. And the narration is basically about how life with the rebellion is pretty tough, but you know they can all stand proud knowing that they're fighting for the right things. And he gets shot, and he's totally wounded badly. And he's telling his teammates, "Get out of here! Like, go on without me." And they don't want to leave him. He says, "Well, take this and give it to my mother." So it's the end of the message, and of course Vader gets his hands on this wounded soldier. And he's saying, "Oh, tell me where the rendezvous point is, and I'll make your death an easy one." And he's like, "Go to hell," more or less, is the answer. Vader, of course, snaps his neck with the Force. And then we fast forward to the bridge of Home One. About a year later, we're in Return of the Jedi. And it's right before the briefing. I'll try and pull up the page here in the novel. Don't mind me.
No problem.
Yeah, so they pull up on Home One, and we see General Madine, and he comes up to Mon Mothma, and he says, the troops are assembled. And Mon Mothma says, "Has there been any news of my son, General?" And there's the big moment. The rebel soldier on Hoth who's been narrating is Mon Mothma's son.
Oh, wow.
And so Madine says, "Yes, madam, there has. I'm sorry." And then we cut into the briefing room, and Mon Mothma comes out. And I always felt that she was really subdued and very sorrowful as she addresses that crowd. And you never quite knew why. I thought she'd be a little bit more energetic, saying, "This is it. This is our, we're going to take out the Empire. Here's how we're going to do it." But she was very, very somber. And this book perfectly drives it home. Of course she's somber. She just literally 10 seconds earlier found out that her son was dead. Killed on Hoth, a year sooner. She had not been in contact with him all that time. So it was a really poignant story. You know, you see her looking at her son's message, and he's recounting back to her, and he's talking to his mom, best to father, and send my love to Lieta. Tell her I'll write as soon as I can. I love you all. Take care. It's just really poignant stuff. Like, that was my personal favorite of the book. Of course, it's not canon, like this whole book, but to know that Mon Mothma had just lost her son really makes her disposition on that in that briefing room in Return of the Jedi just makes so much more sense. And I thought that was a really, really great story.
Yeah, I mean, it just shows you the personal sacrifices and the loss, that comes from a war. And I think it really kind of it hits home with her. And I think that, if anything, that's definitely something I think that should be canon now. I think it adds so much depth to the character, if that were the case.
Absolutely.
Because, I mean, oh, yeah. Yeah. I love that aspect, and I was actually just as you were saying, as you were talking about it, I did find it online. It's on Kindle, so I think I'm going to definitely read it.
Yeah, no, fair warning. Some of the other stories in here are really way out there.
I am a fan of out there, so
wait, the Wat so Tambor one. It is crackers, man. And there's a really creepy Darth Sidious one. There's no words to it at all. It's just all pictures. And there's a couple of them that don't even feel like Star Wars. You don't even know what you're looking at. Huh. But it is a really cool book. The artwork throughout is really interesting. Yeah, I mean, again, if you're a purist for only canon, which is, I'm talking about myself, I can make a bit of an exception for these kinds of things just because they're short. I enjoyed the art, and you know, there's places in here, like for example, that entrenched story, that could just as easily be canon. And it does add so much to the Mon Mothma character. But anyway, that's it. Like I said, it's probably pretty difficult to find in print. But I don't know if it's available. Like you said, it's available on Kindle. That's probably your best bet, and it's probably not that expensive.
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously no longer in print. I mean, you could definitely get used copies of it. They're definitely out there online. But I don't know if you can get like a bookstore or not.
Yeah, I think at this point it's probably going to be pretty tough. But I would definitely recommend it just on the strength of the three stories that I spoiled to death here. I think it's worth picking up just for those. And a couple other ones too are still that I didn't touch on are pretty interesting too. And I'm going to take a closer look at this book tonight and just flip through it, because you never know. Like, you might see a concept of something that maybe didn't quite make it into the prequels, but maybe it saw light in Rogue One or the Force Awakens, or maybe might pop up in Han Solo or The Last Jedi. So I'm going to flip through it a little closer and see if there's something I can't lay claim to and say, see, I found that first. So that's it. We're done, man. A nice quick shot of Journals of the Willing right before Mother's Day weekend. And you know what? There's actually something I wanted to touch on really quick, going back to your Dr. Aphra thing, and this, especially mm-hmm. in light of this being Mother's Day weekend. There's a lot of, you know, father-son relationship with Luke and Anakin, of course, and there's Jyn and Galen, but there's no real mother-daughter relationships in Star Wars. So, you'd mentioned about her father, and I thought maybe is it a missed opportunity that it's not her mother?
I would agree with that. I mean, it very easily could have been her mom, you know, her mom's footsteps that she was following, you know, as far as being an archaeologist. I don't know why Star Wars as a whole shies away from the mother-child relationships.
We got some of it in Catalyst, right? Lyra with baby Jyn.
Yeah, we did get that. I mean, obviously, yeah, Jyn wasn't old enough to really have, you know, a solid, you know, have like a relationship with her. You know, it was more of just, you know, from a mother's perspective with an infant. You know, that's why I kind of wish maybe if Lyra stuck around maybe a little more in Rogue One, maybe we've gotten some, I don't know. But yeah, no, I totally agree. I think there's room for that, for more of that.
Yeah, at some point there's got to be a mother-daughter relationship, or even a mother-son. I mean, we might get Leia with Kylo at some point. But I especially now with Carrie being gone, I don't think we'll get as much of that as maybe we would have had she still been here. Mm. But Star Wars needs that. True. I think Star Wars needs a couple more moms.
Yeah, I mean, we don't know what we're going to get in The Last Jedi, you know, so we'll see where they took Leia and Kylo I mean, granted, it would be a not in the ideal relationship, I'm sure.
Oh, no. I'm sure that's a very broken relationship, too.
But maybe we'll get some interesting scenes. You know, we don't quite know what they filmed, so.
No, not at all. Well, everybody was saying, you know, there's two big things that have to happen. We have to have Luke and Leia meeting up, and Leia and Kylo meeting up. Now, I don't know if both of those happen in episode 8. Maybe they do. I would tend to think that Leia Kylo would have been an episode 9 thing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a shame that Carrie Fisher won't be there to portray that. Maybe somebody else will. Who knows? But that is definitely something that needs to be on screen, I would think.
Oh, absolutely.
All right, man. Steve, a pleasure as always. Have yourself a great weekend, man.
Likewise. Thank you. You too.
And everybody out there, don't forget to check out our friends over at Star Wars Commonwealth. Everybody right now is still on fire, still putting out great work. And yeah, check those guys out. Of course, after you treat your mom to a proper Mother's Day weekend, or the mother of your children, as it were. So that's it for this week. Thanks for listening to Journals of the Willing. We'll be back with episode 75 of the Tumbling Saber podcast in a couple days' time. So we look forward to speaking to you then. Have yourselves a great weekend. You've been listening to Journals of the Willing from the Tumbling Saber team, a member of the Star Wars Commonwealth Podcast Network. Learn more about the network and its members at starwarscommonwealth.com.